Sit down, relax, and grab a cup of coffee with a croissant because it's time for Wisconsin. Wait, is it croissant or is it croissant? I'm not actually sure, so we asked a native French speaker to help me out.
Hi, my name is Jean-Marc Poisson. I'm from Paris. Croissant.
Let's hear that one more time just to make sure we got it right.
Croissant.
Okay, why all the talk about croissant? Well, a listener named Jan got us wondering. Jan sent us this question through WPR's Wisconsin project. Jan writes, I am so amazed that so many people in Wisconsin mispronounce the French names of places such as Prairie du Chien and Fond du Lac. Why? Joe Sammons is with us, professor of linguistics at UW-Madison's Department of Language Sciences. He studies sound changes as well as immigration and language in Wisconsin, or as the French called it back in the 17th century based on their interpretation of the Algonquian name.
Wisconsin.
Joe, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you could say croissant or croissant in a couple different ways. The same is true for a lot of French place names. Before we get into specific names, our asker said, why do we pronounce them wrong? Whenever I talk to people who talk about linguistics, they're a little nervous about saying right or wrong ways. Is there a right or wrong way?
Well, there are established ways. We don't, most of us in the state don't speak French, and so we don't ask for a croissant, and we don't say fond du lac, and that's just part of the way it works. So I would say those are not wrong. They're established local norms, and those local norms change over time.
All right, let's go to our French speaker here, Jean-Marc Poisson. That last name strangely familiar. Here, let's hear him say some of these names, starting with Prairie du Chien.
Prairie du Chien.
Here's Racine.
Racine.
Portage.
Grand Chute.
Oh, we jumped ahead to Grand Chute there. La Pointe.
La Pointe.
And Benoit.
Benoit.
Okay, so can you talk about patterns of language change, how they go from that original French to what are Racines and Prairie du Chiens?
Sure. We always have to substitute sounds. So when he said Prairie du Chien, he said chien. We don't have that nasalized vowel, as we call it, in English. Most English speakers can't pronounce it, so we have to adjust. And the natural way to adjust that is to say an N at the end. So we've adjusted things just like we do with any kind of personal names, just like with words that we borrow from other languages. You had the perfect example there with croissant.
Now, if I were to ask someone for directions to La Pointe, I mean, I guess I get points for technical correctness in French. I probably wouldn't get where I'm going. How does it settle in? What's the breaking point from that original pronunciation to where we lock in on our Englishified pronunciation, if I can, I think, make up a word?
Well, when we had large numbers of French speakers, as you know, the bulk of the population in the state, people traveling through, establishing things, you're going to have people who could pronounce things in a French-like way. Of course, that quickly changed early in the history of the state, and it's stayed changed ever since. So, but just because it gets set one way doesn't mean it stays that way forever. Something I'm really curious about is I've heard many times people say that Prairie du Chien used to be Prairie du Chien, that it used to just have that one, they lost the final vowel of the first part. People don't really say that much. I've heard it maybe once or twice in the wild, but people really don't use it that way. So even when you get that set, when you get a sort of an English-like pronunciation, that doesn't mean it's not going to change from there.
We're talking to Joe Selmans, professor of linguistics at UW-Madison's Department of Language Sciences. We're answering the first in a pair of Wisconsin questions about French influence in Wisconsin. Right now, talking about French place names and how pronunciations have changed over time, from the original French examples, we just heard a bunch of them, to what we say now. Now, is this really particularly true of French names, or do we see it with place names from other languages that we have here in Wisconsin?
Well, of course, it's across the board, because most people in the state don't speak Ho-Chunk, they don't speak Ojibwe, mm-hmm. they don't speak German, they don't speak all of these other languages. So it's a general pattern for sure.
There's a big story about how pronunciations change over time, and it's not just place names. You gave an example to our producer, I think, about the word taco and the story of your wife eating tacos in California.
Yeah, so in back in the 70s, when most people in the upper Midwest didn't really know about tacos, she moved to California, where tacos were a thing, as the young people say now, and came back to visit, and a relative invited her over for tacos. And early on, in as that was a relatively new food item, a lot of people use a heavily anglicized pronunciation, but we've now shifted back to something that's a little more Spanish-like. We don't say it like a Spanish speaker. Our T is very different from a Spanish T, but we've now changed that vowel to be much more Spanish-like.
Now, how about localized pronunciations of places? Like, so my grandpa spent a lot of his life in Port Huron, Michigan, and always talked about his days in Port Yorn.
Yep. This is a really interesting thing. We have local pronunciations that mark you as knowing at least the local territory, even if you're not terribly local. One of the ones that struck me when I moved here was I was going to bicycle. I was in Sturgeon Bay, and I was going to bicycle down to Two Rivers. And a person from Sturgeon Bay asked me, where are you going to bike to today? And I said, Two Rivers. And she said, oh, no, don't say that. It's Trivers. And sure enough, it is. But there's a really interesting pattern where words that we use a lot, whether it's a place name or a personal name or something else, we tend to say them faster and reduce them so that you get the Milwaukee kind of thing for Milwaukee, and Trivers is part of that. And I think your Michigan example fits the same pattern.
It was just dawning on me as you say it. It's all three of those examples are going from three syllables down to two. Are we language speakers, us humans, just lazy and we're looking for shortcuts all the time?
Yeah, well, sometimes we're looking for shortcuts, but again, it's if you're not going to cause any confusion. If you say Milwaukee instead of Milwaukee, people still know what you're talking about. It doesn't actually cause miscommunication or anything. But we always have this tension when we talk. We want to economize in certain ways. That's natural. That's fine. It's a good thing in some ways. But we also have to get our message across. So we have to say enough to convey our message, if that makes sense. So there's a real balance in that sense.
You teach a class on how immigration affects language. What kind of things do you see with immigrants coming to Wisconsin over the last, couple hundred years now?
Oh, well, a whole lot of Wisconsin English has been shaped by immigration. It's only very recently that we can really talk about there being distinct varieties of English in Wisconsin. If you go back and look at old newspapers and old books, the discussions of a Wisconsin accent are very rare. And sometimes when they say, oh, he had a Wisconsin accent, what they mean was they had a German accent or a Norwegian accent or a Polish accent. So it's pretty recent that it's come about. And a lot of features that we have in that come from immigrant speech, immigrant English, have made their way into Wisconsin English. So some things are considered that have that origin are considered sort of old-fashioned or rural today. So people who say dim over there instead of them over there has that association. But some things that come from other languages are really very robust and aren't thought of that way at all. So if you take the Eastern Wisconsin use of the word once, like come here once, that is pretty clearly from German, and it doesn't have – people have just started – have picked that up, and it now marks people as being from Eastern Wisconsin or other parts of the state maybe, but it's not – it's no longer associated with German, and lots of people without German background use it on a daily basis.
Now, it's easy for me to look at history and say, okay, yeah, language changed back then to what it is now, but from the vantage point of now, it seems like our language is what it is. It's locked in, but I'm wrong about that, right? It's still changing.
It's changing really fast. I'm teaching a class on language change right now and my to a bunch of undergraduates, and they're all doing projects. A whole bunch of them are doing projects on how speech is changing in Wisconsin. So one of the things that people always talk about here, right, is the pronunciation of a bag, or the same with words like agriculture, where you get people saying agriculture. Some of the students just did a study where they looked at a set of young men and women from Madison and Green Bay, and they're still doing it. This is happening now. These changes are advancing on a pretty regular basis, and other things are coming in that are very much not Wisconsin, but are quickly taking over Wisconsin. So the thing that company sleeps on is for me is a cot, and the past tense of to catch is caught. But huge numbers of Americans don't say those things differently. They say "cot" for both of them, or a few people say "cot" for both of them. This is coming into Wisconsin pretty rapidly right now. You've got more young people saying "she caught the ball," and fewer saying "she caught the ball." So it's definitely happening, and it's happening really fast, and it's easy to miss it. You have to pay attention.
Let's take a quick call before we let you go. Darren is with us in Green Bay. Darren, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I've been here 28 years from Great Britain. Still got much of my Buckinghamshire accent, and I said to the kids one day, "Oh, the Milwaukee Bucks." Well, I'm from the county of Bucks, and oddly enough, Americans would call it Buckinghamshire, but I said to the kids, the only time you say shire really is if you're talking Lord of the Rings, and that word is a standalone one. We in Buckinghamshire, actually, it's almost like we take all the vowels out and replace them with apostrophes. So we locals call ourselves Buckinghamshire. And the kids that I teach take great fun in that.
Darren, thanks a lot for that. And I've, of course, enjoyed my Worcestershire sauce, or Worcestershire sauce, a similar thing. In American English, though, it seems like we actually take those letters out and put in that apostrophe where the British don't. Is that a thing, Joe?
Yeah. One of the things that varies a whole lot across different kinds of English is our stress patterns and where we reduce unstressed syllables. So Buckinghamshire has got that. I can't do it very well, obviously. Has got that very unreduced set of syllables that a lot of Americans find difficult to use. But we also have a lot of regional differences, right? I'm originally from the South, and we have initial stress on a lot of words like insurance and so forth. And I still, to this day, even living up here for 25, 30 years now, I still say Detroit most of the time and not Detroit. And you note, of course, that that is not the French pronunciation. Nobody says Detroit unless they're making a joke.
Joe, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Joe Salmons is a professor of linguistics at UW-Madison's Department of Language Sciences. He talked to us about why we don't say Wisconsin French names like the French do. Coming up, we'll take a look at why we got all those French names in the first place, look at Wisconsin's French history and heritage. You could join in at 800-642-1234 if you have a question, if you celebrate French customs here in Wisconsin. 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Though based on what we just learned, depending on who you ask, I might actually be
Rob Ferret.
Not really a French name, though. Whoever I am, we've got another Why Scotsin question from a listener about French influence in Wisconsin. Here's a listen.
My name is Tomas Dominguez, and I'm from Mukwonago, Wisconsin. With all the French history and French names in the state, why isn't there a stronger French culture? I know that at least in Milwaukee, there's at least one major university named after a French explorer, Marquette University. The history of the French exploring the Wisconsin territories is rather well documented. Nowadays, we think of a lot of German culture in Wisconsin, especially with all the beer brewers in the state. But why didn't the French stick around?
We're talking about why there are so many French names in Wisconsin, but why French culture and heritage not front and center. Gabrielle Verdier is Professor Emerita of French at UW-Milwaukee. She directed the Wisconsin French Connections Sesquicentennial Project and founded the Festival of Films in French at UW-Milwaukee. Gabrielle, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So Tomas asked there why the French didn't stick around. I guess they did some, but they don't seem to have that prominent place in Wisconsin legend now. Can you tell us about that?
Well, first of all, I want to let you know that the question your listener asked is exactly the question I had when I came to Wisconsin in 1993. I was at NYU. I was offered a job here. I looked at a Wisconsin map, and I saw all of these French names. And so when I came here, I was curious about it, and that's how I came up with this project that was funded by the Sesquicentennial about Wisconsin's French connections. Now, I think that we have to go back as far as the Germans go. We all know that there were many German immigrants to Wisconsin, especially in the 19th century. When Wisconsin was becoming a state in 1848, 1848. So a big influence of German immigrants because they were leaving Germany for all sorts of economic and political reasons. The French came much earlier. The first person with a French name to arrive in Wisconsin was Jean Nicollet in 1634, and he came from Canada. So most of the French who actually came here came from the New France, the French territories in North America, the ones that they claimed in North America in the 16th century when Jacques Cartier discovered the St. Lawrence River, et cetera, and claimed a vast territory, including all the Great Lakes, for France. However, that didn't mean that they actually got to Wisconsin or anything like that. They kept on whatever French people, explorers they were, kept on going west in order to find, guess what, the route to India and China, right? Very famous. And Nicollet came in 1634, when he landed in Green Bay and he saw some Native Americans, some indigenous people, he thought they were Indians from India. So even though, you know, we know the Mayflower and all that, and the English arrived on the eastern coast of the U.S. In about 17th century, the French had arrived here earlier, but they had not gotten to the very end. They had not explored to the very end. But so all of the French names came from the fact that French-speaking people were the first to arrive in that territory, which belonged to, of course, indigenous people, and gave these territories French names.
Right. It seems like a key,
French to get here.
Seems like a key part of the story, Gabrielle, is the French explorers were the first people to make maps, put words on them, and then share those maps. And that's why you found all those French names when you moved to Wisconsin.
Of course. The French were the first. And the French explorers, the coureurs du bois, the ones who were fur trappers and all that. And then, of course, the missionaries who came, especially the Jesuit missionaries. That's why we mentioned Marquette. So they documented things that they saw, and they sent it back to France to get support from, you know, financial support and so on. But people did not necessarily come after that. There was a settlement in Quebec, 1608, and it was hard to get the French to move or to want to move to the New World, by the way, because it was really cold here. The territory, it was very cold. And frankly, life was not that bad in France. France was the biggest country and had the biggest agriculture of any European country. So there weren't as many famines. There wasn't as much starvation as in, for example, in Spain, or in England, in Ireland. So people were not necessarily moving to the New World for economic reasons.
So we don't have this big footprint of French settlers here. Can you talk a little bit about the contribution of those early French Canadians and later French visitors, even if they weren't settlers, to the state?
Well, mostly I would say they were French Canadians because they all came through New France through Canada in order to reach here, except when France also claimed Louisiana, and then that was in the early 18th century, and then some settlers came through Louisiana. But the contributions are, of course, there were linguistic contributions, and the fur trade was developed with the collaboration with the Native Americans, and that's one thing that the French are very distinct. With that, I think, is their contribution, is that they did interact and they intermarried with Native Americans and quite a bit because they saw that as advantageous to the fur trade, do you see? And frankly, fur trade was the best activity in town because agriculture was more difficult for people not used to being farmers in the cold that we experience here in the upper part of North America. So that is one. Then many Canadians who were, by the way, English, they were British, right? They had been, France lost its North American territories in 1763 when it lost a big world war, which is called in the U.S. the French and Indian War. So all of these territories that were under the French crown had to be ceded back to Britain. And that's another reason why there were not many French settlers, because this whole area, Wisconsin, was no longer under French control of any kind, but was under British control. And it is true that the British and then finally the Americans were not as eager to encourage intermarriage with the Native Americans. The French were encouraging that, actually, because they needed a population. So the French Canadians were very important in the development of the mining in northern part of Wisconsin, and very much in the lumber trade. There are many French Canadians when they were in a very bad economic situation.
And that's all the time we have. Thanks to our guest, Gabrielle Vardier, a professor emerita of French at UW-Milwaukee. She directed the Wisconsin French Connections Sesquicentennial Project and founded the Festival of Films in French at UW-Milwaukee. Thanks also to our listeners, Jan and Tomas, who sent us their questions about French language and history in Wisconsin through WPR's Why Wisconsin Project. If there's something you're curious about in the state, let us know. Submit your question at WPR.org/WhyWisconsin. That's like WHY Wisconsin.